Welcome to Minority Corner.
With an Eke.
And James. Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues.
Only more black, queer.
Oh, and ladylike.
Changing it up. It's better
throwing
now.
Throwing me a fastball into it.
She likes it.
This week on Minority Corner.
Ooh, what whimsical goodies do you have for us this week, Nege?
Well, I am talking about Tyrus Wong and his influence.
Who that?
He is this amazing cartoonist that we never talk about, Chinese-American, who did a big impact on Bambi, among other things.
Oh my god, my favorite, which is where I learned the phrase Twitter-pated, which I am right now because it's spring.
Ooh! What's going on in your springtime corner? Spring, James?
Spring it has sprung. And in honor of, not only is it spring, but we're entering into June, which is our prideful pride month.
Yes.
This is full pride bonanza month. And I want to circle back, kicking it off.
Okay.
I'm going to kick it off with a little, does it get better based on the It Gets Better campaign?
Hmm.
Did it get better? Does it get better? And fuck your safe spaces, ? Do we need safe spaces? I don't know. So we're going to take a big ass look at that, where we are now.
You got a lot of questions to answer on your segment.
So many questions. There's a lot. Mine is full of questions. And I don't even know if I'm presenting answers. I'm just going to ask a lot of questions.
Things that make you go,
I do have, funny you say that, I have a corner about that.
Oh, okay, good. Well, shall we go into
things that make you, it's the things that make you go, what the fuck is going on? But it's similar to that song.
I like it. Close, yeah. It's the close cousin of that song. It was big in Romania. Well,
I don't want to get sued, so there it is. Can't sue this. Can't sue this. Could they sue that?
So James just informed me that he got that milk gift.
Hashtag blessed. Lactose intolerant. Nah. You don't get me. I got the milk gene.
I don't understand
gene.
It.
I got the milk gene.
I don't
gene.
Get it.
Can't get
you
me.
You got the milks.
I know. Not me. I eat all the milks. I drink all the milks all day, every day. That's just me. I'm just
milk just runs through me like gasoline.
It stays in my stomach till I'm tired of it, and I'm like,
stop it.
Away with you now, milk product. Goodbye, yogurt.
It's a welcome guest.
Goodbye, ice cream. Time for you to go the way of the fruit roll-ups and cabbage.
What?
I've got a weird.
Here we go. Just
weird
fruit
diet.
Roll-ups and cabbage and milk. What's going on in that stomach?
How I look so good, girl. I'm writing a book.
That's that nasty diet.
That's the name of the book by James Arthur. It's called That Nasty Diet. Forward by Eneke. Time. Eneke, you are beautiful.
Thanks. So are you.
Just doing. It's on the agenda. For a little peek behind the curtains. A little peek behind
how the sausage is made.
Just a little look underneath the jock strap, underneath the hood. Eneke and I create a Google Docs. Little shout out to Google. Way to go.
Thanks, Googs. Give us some money.
I was going to say the same thing.
Okay.
We have a little running like Google Doc that's like the agenda, and the first thing says you're beautiful. I assumed Eneke wrote it.
I did not.
I didn't write it. So
there were a lot of things. So we were ahead of the game, which is unusual for us. Last week, we put in all of our notes prior.
Yeah.
And apparently, we don't remember half of the
things
that we
wrote in there.
I was like,
did you write this? She's like, I didn't write this.
I was like, no. Did you write it?
Yeah. Nope. She didn't. Eneke, I, first and foremost, is so glad to see you because I have a confession to, I have a confession to tell you.
These are James confessions.
I accidentally... Oh, I'm almost embarrassed to tell you this.
What is it?
I was accidentally a part of a cult for 2 hours today. It was an accident.
Oh, 2 hours?
Yeah.
How did this happen?
Okay.
were you like walking and then you joined a parade and you're like, this was fun. And then you found out they were like,
you gotta,
I don't know.
To all of our listeners on the podcast waves, you gotta be careful because there are some podcasts out there that are questionable. So you know how.
What is this?
I'm in a very fragile, not a fragile, I'm in a journey right now, right? So last year, I had a lot of rough things going on in my life last year.
Yeah, and you were working through it.
Always looking for that, you know, spiritual enlightenment. I'm always looking for those things that are to help me be like, I'm about like human peak peak business, yes. right? Us yes. as human beings evolving to our best possible potential. I'm all about that, right? Uh-huh. And there's a lot of like inspirational podcasts that I listen to. There's a mindfulness podcast. You know, I'm studying my...
We have a whole segment on that that you did.
Yeah, I did an entire segment. I, you know, studying my Buddhism and all my Buddhism, all that stuff, yes. right?
Yes.
And I got... There's this one called Inspire Nation and he has really good interviews. And there's one that was happening. I was like, whoa, this guy is saying some really deep stuff. Wow, this is really fascinating. Okay. Fascinating, right?
Uh-oh. First red flag.
Well, no, because like he's talking about like, you know, no judgments, being you.
Oh, good.
Going back to your past moments and traumas of where like you said, I can't do this and uprooting it. So it's like getting rid of the root of like why you think you can't be happy or why you can't be wealthy or successful. So going back to like a time when like, you know, a teacher or a friend or a parent and like told you that or moments of PTSD, moments of big trauma. So uprooting that. And he has this like... This is where the first red flag came in. He has this mantra of just random words that he'll just say again and again. And
what, like cabbage, milk, and...
And he just says it, and it's like, it's just all these different, like, good or bad. I'm not even going to recite it, because I don't want to infect your brains with it, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, that's weird. But he's like, you know, your brain just doesn't make sense of things because these are deep-rooted traumas. So your brain isn't going to be able to, like, it's so deep in the subconscious and won't be able to, like, unpack it. But I'll tell you this, and this is how,
here we go.
This is how they get you, because I felt so good after his interview. Like, I was like,
yes.
I was working out at the gym today because I was like, I have no blocks. I am
this
strong.
Is today.
This happened, like, yesterday into today, right?
Okay. Okay. A little cross day action.
And then this morning I was like, well, I wonder if he has a podcast. And lo and behold, him and his co-host have a podcast. And
everybody got a podcast.
Everybody got a podcast. So that's why you got to be careful who you're putting onto your ear holes, ladies and gentlemen.
It's so true.
Because he's like, you know, then here's the second red flag. He refers to us as humanoids, right?
No. Oh, right.
And we try to get you like, you're different and elite. You're like sort of elite. Like you think differently. You don't, you know, I.
From what? From aliens?
From people who like just want to sit on the couch and drink beer all the time. Like you.
But that's fun.
But this is what all. But see, I would be a humanoid or whatnot, right?
That sounds awkward. All right. Okay. First red flag, humanoid.
Well, that's the second red flag, right? Because of the crazy mantra thing, right?
Right.
And so then I found an episode. And there was an episode that they had like this guest woman on she's a Kiwi and she wrote this book about like the joys of business. And they had some callers coming in, and the callers were great. This is called Access Consciousness, by the way. It's called Access Consciousness. Okay. So if you see it, if you hear anyone talking about it, wake them the fuck up, okay?
I need to know how this is a cult.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we're getting in there. So it's happening. And like the second episode, I was like, okay. And there were some moments where my body was tingling, thinking like something is weird about what they're talking about. Like something wasn't vibing well, but I thought maybe it's just because I'm afraid of my own success, right? That's what I was thinking, right? And then they get into the second, do the first episode, and they do the second episode, and then it's just the two guys. And at one point, they're trying to help a singer, and she's like, how do I get my voice to be less nasally? And they're like, sing for me. And she's like, yeah. And then they're like, there's a big pause. And he's like, okay, I just cleared you. Try it again.
What?
Try it again.
No, okay. What?
Wait, and he does this about, she's like, and he's like, did you feel that? I just cleared you. And she's like, and then she does it again. He's like, did you hear? You were less nasally that one time. He's like, but don't sing for 24 hours. It'll get better, right?
And he's a charlatan.
And then, oh, wait. And okay, it gets worse. It does not get better.
Oh, my God.
It gets worse.
And, oh, my goodness.
Then she's like, how can I start singing more sexy? Like, I want to sing like a woman now. And he's like,
what?
I kid you not. He then says, before you go out and sing, just rub your nipples. Just rub your nipples. I'm not kidding. He's like, and I'm like working from home and I'm typing. I'm like, wait
I'm
a
dead.
Minute.
I'm
this
done.
Is, he's like, just rub your nipples.
Where am
he's
I
like,
right now?
Just pinch them. He's like, you're a storyteller as a singer. So your body needs to like believe this fully. And she's like, thanks. And then I was like, hold up, something's wrong. So then I Googled it and the third or fourth thing that popped up and it said Access Consciousness, a cult, a knockoff from Scientology.
Oh, no.
Aneke, I was deep in the trenches.
You were buying the robes. You were buying the books.
Aneke,
you're about to get the charms.
So then,
you were in it. And you saved yourself. Those nipples saved you.
It was like the nipples were a wake-up call. Of like, wait a minute. Something's not right.
this feels weird.
Well, like, and it's one of those things where they, like, they have all these free classes, and then it's like, and then there's, then you get to go to different levels, right?
Then you gotta go to different levels. You gotta buy those classes. This sounds like
Scientology. It's a knockoff. The guy, he was next up in line. This is Access Consciousness. He was next up in line to take over after L. Ron Hubbard stepped down.
Ooh.
And it went in a different direction, and then his wife and him decided to start their own organization. This guy's a failed realtor. He's not a scientist. He's like a failed realtor who owned hundreds.
Well, I mean, L. Ron Hubbard is a failed science fiction writer.
Well, in this, they have classes. Oh, they family in this organization stands for fucked up and mainly interested in limiting you. And be
they
warned.
Use the word fuck?
Yes, because and that was the charm of like this group is because they drop F bombs and they
we're edgy. We say fuck.
And they also call women the C word sometimes. They call their past wives C words. Nope. Like, so all these women are like leaving and talking. Oh, it gets even worse. He says not to be afraid of like young children are incredibly sexy.
No, gross. Sexy and children should not be together.
And he's like, but don't be afraid of that. You're not going to do anything about it. So this,
I'm not afraid of it. I'm disgusted by it.
It's just not a thing, actually, right?
No,
and then
sorry.
They have classes like lies, lines, and manipulation. And you're known as an accessory. Once you're part of this group, you're cult.
They actually call you an accessory? You're an accessory. Like to murder?
Well, funny you should mention that because accessories are instructed in this course on how to lie and get what they want and have fun doing it for just $2,500.
How to lie mm-hmm. and have fun doing it?
Yes.
This is a mess.
There's another demolecular manifestation and molecular demanifestation, where participants are how to talk to molecules to ask them to change, for example, to make wine tastier, get rid of tumors, or terminate unwanted pregnancies. And
that's
$2,000.
Bananas and dangerous. That's dangerous bananas.
Yeah.
I don't mind somebody telling me like, oh, talk to this wine and it'll taste better.
Yeah.
But to be like, talk to my uterus to get rid of this pregnancy. No, a baby's going to grow.
A baby
that
will
grow.
That
is ridiculous. That is... What? You can psych your brain out to taste some wine better. But
and like I Aneke, you know, you and I went to hippie university and
I am
all about like the different sort of, you know, spiritual healing and into it. Like I think our minds are very powerful, but a lot of that's also like backed up in science. Like I switched over to this other podcast with Dr. Joe Dispenza, who he was on the documentary mm-hmm. What the Bleep Do We Know, and a lot of the stuff that he's talking about has been backed up by science, which is the scientific method where they try different things out, right? Like mm-hmm. his theories and ideas of quantum physics, like even science in itself, there's things that we believe now that, you know, 50 years from now they're gonna be like, I can't believe you believe that, but through the scientific method we're able to discover those things.
This is not dangerous stuff, though. This isn't like you can balance your chakras into flying off this building. Like, that's when you know something's fishy and weird.
When there hasn't been any sort of, like, what are the tests? And, like, there's the scientific method was created to be able to test different... And there's still things that we can't explain. But this brouhaha, Aneke,
you side-eyed the shit out of that and got out of there. That's why side-eyeing can save your life.
And that is the thing for this week's episode.
Yeah.
Let's see the meme on that. Side-eyeing can save your life. Because Aneke, I ran out and just told the woman my task rabbit was here cleaning, and I was just like, I just escaped a cult. I was terrified. My heart was racing. Aneke, it was a slippery slope. You could have been gone to me forever. I was going to be an accessory.
You better not be an accessory. I don't like this. I'm so glad that you backed that shit up because I was like, where are we going with this? And this shit got crazy.
It got crazy.
That's what anybody use this as a lesson from James. If something sounds weird, it probably is.
Because you know what? My body was tingling while they were talking and saying those crazy up, down, left, right, get rid of it.
Nintendo moves.
I was going to say it was like a video game passcode. There is no passcode to hack life. It doesn't work that way. And something was tingling and being like, something's not right. And then it just took the grace of the nipple to awaken me and be like, oh, Lord.
The grace of the nipple.
But it's why I'm so grateful to science and folks like Neil deGrasse Tyson, who I finished his documentary on Netflix, The Cosmos.
And I watched him on Hot Ones, a interview show where he eats hot wings.
Oh, right. Yes. You were talking to me about that. So what was he doing on that?
He was just talking about science while eating some hot wings.
Sounds great. When are they going to get Minority Corner on it?
We need to be on that, even though I'm not too sure how well I would do with hot wings. But he made it all the way to the end with Mega Death Sauce. And he was a G about it.
I won a jalapeno eating contest back in high school, so we're good to go.
I guess, but I just don't know if I want a flaming butthole.
Oh, yeah, my ass was in pain.
Yeah, that shit goes through your body.
It does. Well, you and I were talking offline. I was blown away by the Cosmo series. And
yes.
I highly recommend it. It's also just amazing, this this dope-ass black man is, like, leading this, like, series about, you know.
Yeah, not only is he a dope-ass science crazy higher up science man, I forget the name, is he a astrophysicist?
I think he's an astrophysicist. Yes.
He was a dancer in college, so he was on a dance team.
Didn't know about
that. He, like, got voted sexiest scientist by Time Magazine. He's a man about town, and I appreciate that. A renaissance man, if you will.
And I highly recommend that series. It seems like it was straight out of a page out of our podcast. We do a lot of history stuff, but his series was also about how intrinsic science and history are together. And
yeah.
I have found, because I've had a lot of anxiety, and it was so weird for me because studying the universe made me feel less anxious, if that makes sense.
It does, because we talked about it, because I think I told you at the same time. Also, by the way, his Cosmos is basically a base off of Carl Sagan's show, Cosmos.
Yes.
So the two are hand in hand, which is a perfect baton handoff. But the universe scares the fuck out of me.
Oh, okay. Would you like to elaborate? We'll just leave it at that. That's it.
Well, and we talked about this too, and he was able to bring it. He makes the universe accessible to me. Like, to me, when I sit and I think about the universe, I can go, my brain will spin out of control where I'm like, it's humongous. We don't know where it goes. We don't know. Like, I just recently read an article about how NASA is sending a probe to the moon, to the sun.
Yeah.
And I was like, what if it hits the sun and it blows up the sun? We don't know these things. This is crazy. So I need to just take a chill and realize these scientists know what the fuck they're doing. Mm-hmm. And while he was eating wings, Neil deGrasse Tyson, he broke down the universe in a way that, like, blew my mind and made me feel more at home about it.
What did he say?
Well, he said that the universe is, there are three main elements that are found in the universe. And I'm going to butcher this because I'm going off the top of my head, but I believe one is carbon, one is hydrogen.
That sounds good.
And there's another one that I don't know. And smart people listening to the podcast are probably screaming at us right now.
Yeah. And I just watched it, so I should definitely probably know. But all those sounds, that right? Oxygen? Did you say that? I don't know.
Hydrogen's a part of oxygen. But anyway,
Look at you, smart lady. H2O.
No, it's not. That's water. Hydrogen and oxygen make water. Hydrogen and oxygen are two different things. Oh, my God.
Carbon, hydrogen, and just tweet out the other one. I feel like I should know this, too, because I just watched the series.
Or even if I'm wrong about all of them.
No, definitely carbon. It's definitely carbon, because we're carbon-based life forms.
Animals. Yeah.
Because everything is. Yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so those three elements are the main thing in the universe, and those three elements are the main thing in us. Mm. So instead of thinking that us and the universe are two separate things, we are the universe, which is magical to me.
So beautiful. And I remember you told me this a long time ago, that we're all part of stars, like these stars that explode. And it's just like, watch the series. I highly recommend it it's so beautiful because how intrinsic and science and spirituality really can, for myself as a practicing Buddhist.
Okay.
I have found that, like, it's just been so well intertwined that, like, the roots of science and spirituality can really go really well together. And also it's like, it reminds me of, like, it's our opportunity and our job to, like, learn as much as we possibly can. And it just, like, I've re-fell in love with science and the history of things.
And it's good.
They do a good job of being like, there's also this lady scientist. Sometimes I did not appreciate when they're like, here's these cave people and they were all white. I did not appreciate that.
Cave people look different, I assume. I don't know.
I'm probably sure that they weren't that I don't know. Especially because he was like...
It depends on what country... I don't... That's true. Well, it depends on the migration of humans.
One had a goatee. Where they went. There was a black guy who was a cave guy who maybe had a goatee. Maybe he was black. That sounds... I wasn't sure.
What? He had a goatee.
But the... I will say, the money behind the Cosmo series is so epic, and it's so amazing, and it just... It puts everything in greater perspective, so I highly recommend the Cosmo series, and not the Access of Consciousness, which is a crazy-ass cult. Just circling it back.
Circling it back. I love that you were able to bring in an alternative. You weren't just like, poo-poo to this, moving on with the show. No, we are going to counteract that shit with something good for you to look at and look into and enjoy yourself with some legit knowledge.
I would recommend, if you want that spiritual stuff, the What the Bleep Do We Know with the other doctor guy, and then some legitimate science type stuff.
With the other doctor guy?
What is he's like a real doctor? Dr. Joe Dispenza. It was on my other tabs. So I didn't have it.
Oh, okay, good. I'm glad that you found it. I feel like we should go into the corners.
Let's go into the corner. Hopefully we have a bonus. We have a bonus chit-chat, little nuggets we want to talk about. If there's time at the end of the show, we'll get to them.
And if not, we always got time for chit-chats.
We always got time. So we'll make room. So there will be time. Because you know what? We run this. Who run the podcast? Aneke and James.
Doesn't roll off your tongue, but it works.
Who run the podcast? The Wonder Twins of Podcasting.
Oh, no, yes!
Does that work?
That works. Okay. I liked it.
You just want it to work because you want that Wonder Twins in there.
Just shoehorning that shit in. We're gonna get into some history.
I love it.
Gonna get into some history.
Get me in it. And okay, I love because I trust you. And I know that I don't need to like side-eye Google you and see, is Aneke a cult? So
I am not a cult.
And Minority Corner is also not a cult. Like, yeah.
The only time that I will tell you to flick your nipples to change your life will be in a sexual situation.
To change your life. That's literally what it was. You want to change your life? Flick your nipples. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, we're in a sexual situation.
God.
All right.
Yes.
So,
but how about a non-sexual situation? We're going to Disney.
Yes, we're going to Disney right now. So, this is actually kind of awesome that I'm doing this right now, because last week you talked about Asian Americans and immigration, model minority, and all of that.
Yes.
So we're going to focus in on one guy. His name is Tyrus Wong. And this was inspired by a little clip that I saw on Fusion. I know you guys will watch like Facebook. You'll see like these little like short videos or like Now This, those kind of things where they give you like a quick rundown.
Yeah.
It's always good to do a little, if you're inspired by it and you like it, do like, a little background.
What is this?
More research. Yeah.
Always so keep I was digging. Like, that's what the internet is there for. And then you'll find out if it's a cult or not.
Side-eye everything. So I was like, this is good, but this isn't a lot of information. So thanks, Fusion, for inspiring me. But then I found a New York Times article that really tells the story of Tyrus Wong, and I was super inspired. So the New York Times article is written by Marguerite Fox, and I'm basically just going to tell the life and times of Tyrus Wong.
All right, sit down, cuddle up, and grab an ice cream sandwich.
Okay. And you guys will notice a lot of parallels from James's episode last week. So if you want to rehash and listen to that, I encourage it. I think episode 81.
Yep, because this is 82, unless our numbers are fucked up again. But anything is possible.
Ooh, this is episode 82?
Yeah.
This is the best year.
Why?
Of America, because Aneke was born.
Jimmy Carter was president? Right, so. Oh. Was he president then?
No, it wasn't that long ago.
Well, I can't keep track of that.
I think it was Reagan.
Reagan.
Okay, so, hey, I was born, and that's
yay.
All.
Yay. You were the only good thing to come out of that year, and whoever else was born.
Well, Andrew was born, too.
Oh, him, too.
Andrew, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Two good things.
All right. So, Wong Jen Yeo was born October 25th, 1910, in a farming village in Guangdong Province. As a young child, he already exhibited a love of drawing and was encouraged by his father. In 1920, seeking better economic prospects, Jen Yeo and his father embarked for the United States, leaving his mother and sister behind. Jen Yeo would never see his mother again.
What? Damn. This is already starting off hard hitting.
Right? This is the thing that we don't recognize when people move from one country to another, especially all the immigrants that come here to America. They are leaving tons of family behind, and half of these people will never see their family again. This is a true, like, this is not a fluke story. This is basically the story of immigrants coming to America.
Mm-hmm. Not to be confused with the Eddie Murphy movie, which was a different,
that's different there, story. That country doesn't exist. So
it's also getting a sequel. Just sidebar, it's getting a sequel.
No, I'm sick of these sequels.
They're trying to get after that.
What's up with original?
They're trying to get after that. What's that? Nostalgia. Yeah, trying to get you up there. Anyway. Is this Velvet?
So, Zhen Yao and his father were obliged to travel under false identities, a state of affairs known among Chinese immigrants as being a paper son. Oh. So basically, a paper son is what, here, let me explain. Okay. It. So basically, like you did in the last episode, you talked about the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Where the United States was like, we don't want Chinese people here, we're racist. Mm-hmm. So
here it is, so 100 years later. Yeah.
So this is, in order to kind of circumvent this shit, mm-hmm. This is one way people would do it. So in 1906, San Francisco had the earthquake and the fire, right?
Yeah.
So because of the huge number of municipal documents, including birth certificates, immigration records, they were destroyed in this fire. So many newly arrived Chinese people capitalized on this loss by maintaining that they had been born in San Francisco before the fire. So then, seeing the loophole?
They were like, mine was in that fire. So
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Too bad I'm here. And then, so as United States citizens, they were entitled to bring over their relatives. So they would be like, yeah, I was here. And also,
so was,
here comes my grandma.
Yeah, she was, you know, I was already here. So grandma's got to come here too.
My family here.
Makes sense.
Right?
Well done.
So a lot of people would then use, they would call them paper sons. They would essentially shuttle in people from China under false identities as their relatives.
Wow.
And that is how Zhen Yao, who is Tyler Wong, we'll get to that, mm-hmm. and his father got here.
Wow.
So in December 30th, 1920, after a month at sea, the Wongs landed at Angel Island Immigration Station, which is basically the Ellis Island of the West.
And also where I had my birthday party where I got blackout drunk yes. when I turned 28. Yes. But that's neither here nor there.
Yay, two classy affairs.
That's all Angel Island's claim to fame. This being the Ellis Island of the West Coast and James Martin's 28th birthday
pirate party.
Ooh, I was drunk.
Ooh, it was a mess. Anyway, so, they were on sea for a month, and they came to Angel Island, and then Zhen Yao was detained on the island for nearly a month yeah. as the only child among the immigrants there.
Wow.
So he was the only kid there, and he was there for a whole month damn. Just waiting to leave detention.
I can't even imagine what that would be like to be like a child and you're just like, I am here in this strange land away from all of my family, and I'm just in this detention
right,
center.
Right, his dad wasn't even...
Wow.
His dad wasn't there with him. His dad was already released to Sacramento, so he was there by himself as this kid.
Damn. And then his dad had to be in fucking Sacramento. Have you been there? I'm sure yeah. it was shitty then, too.
Ooh.
Not a
we
fan.
Love the Sacramento listeners.
I love anyways. The listeners.
Okay, so he finally joined his father in Sacramento, and a school teacher Americanized his name to Tyrus.
Whoa.
Thanks, school teacher. Okay. So from then on out, he was known as Tyrus Wong. After that, his father left to go to L.A., leaving Tyrus in Sacramento in a boarding house for 2 years.
Damn, this kid.
So his dad's like, bye.
He is like their original orphan Annie, like orphan Tyrus. Where's that
crazy.
Story? Yeah.
Right? So when Tyrus, so his first art teacher with his father. So his father, this is before he left. Oh, wait. Let me scoop back. So, okay. So he lived in a vernum infested boarding house, sandwich routine, a butcher shop, and a brothel. Even more orphan Annie.
This, yeah. Just when you thought it couldn't get even more orphan Annie, kicked in it up a notch. This is a hard knock life. This is the hard knock life.
Let's just add something else to the mix. What? After school, Tyrus worked as a houseboy for two Pasadena families, earning 50 cents a day.
50 cents a day. That's like...
And then went back to his house between the butcher shop and the brothel.
Like, wow. It's a hard knock life for Tyrus. Also, remember, someone renamed him, too.
Right. The teacher was like, I don't like your name. Fuck your culture. Here's another name.
And like, I wonder how much English he spoke too as well. This sounds like a nightmare. This sounds terrible. Right? Daddy, why'd you bring me here?
I know. That's what I think. God. So this is why you got to research these things. Because in that Fusion clip, I didn't know any of this shit.
That Fusion clip is probably just like, he came here from China. And that
it was just a bunch of clips of Bambi. But anyway, so... His first art teacher with his dad. Mm-hmm. Now, this is important because his dad trained him nightly on calligraphy when his dad was around. So his dad, they didn't have enough money for ink or drawing paper. Yeah. So he would dip a brush in water and then just trace characters on newspaper.
Wow. Oh, those,
and then his
those tracing techniques do work. I used to get those books where I tried to trace in them, but I didn't have the patience. But it does work.
Well, Tyrus had the patience and the talent, which was seen by his junior high teacher, who was like, "Oh, you talented boy." And then was like, "You should go to this summer school at the Otis Art Institute in Los Angeles." And then he studied there for 5 years while also working as the school janitor.
Just doing it all. It's a hard knock still life.
Everything.
Life is still a hard knock life for me.
It's crazy.
Oh, geez.
Okay, so now we're getting into his art.
Ooh.
So in 1932 and again in 1934, his work was included in group shows at the Art Institute of Chicago that also featured Picasso, Matisse, Paul Klee. And then also from 1936 to 1938, Mr. Wong was an artist for the Work Progress Administration, creating paintings for libraries and other public spaces.
Wow.
So he was already super accomplished before he got the job at Disney in 1938.
He already had like a resume. They're like, show me the receipts. Oh, yeah. He's like, my art has already been up. Which gallery would you like to go to?
See that library mural?
I did that.
I did that shit.
And I cleaned the floors too. What you got?
Exactly.
What you got?
And Disney's like, you're going to be an in-betweener.
Of course.
Which is a person who creates thousands of intermediate drawings that bring animated sequences to life. Ooh. So you don't create the images. You just are, oh, this cartoon needs to walk from A to B. You have to draw the legs that move.
Yeah, like I've already, you're literally the Michelle of this Destiny's Child here. I'm the Beyonce. Yes. I draw it up. You're not Kelly.
Yes.
Michelle.
So, one, he gets hired as an in-betweener, even though he's painted all these libraries and has shown works next to Picasso. Mm. Two, on the first day of the job, he gets called a chink and was often mistaken as a cafeteria worker.
Okay. Well, okay. Yeah. I'm just glad, like, it's just pointing out the racism. I'm not, like, glad that you're showing me that there was racism to Asian Americans, but I'm glad that you're pointing it out.
We just need to talk about this.
Because,
yes.
First day at work.
Because this is ridiculous. Mm-mm. So, okay. So this is when the good stuff starts.
Oh, thank God.
So while he was doing this boring shit at Disney, the artistic direction for Bambi was struggling. Like, people were like, we don't know what to fucking do with these deers and woodland creatures. And Tyrus was like, ooh, I see my chance. So... His paintings were mostly inspired by ancient Chinese landscapes. So he was like, y'all need some ancient Chinese landscapes in your fucking Bambi project. Ooh. And they were like, you know what? You are right. And so they basically, and they've said that never has it happened before and rarely again that a whole project will rely and mold to one specific artistic vision as they did with Tyrus's work.
Oh.
So basically, if you look at Bambi, all the background paintings, all the different, the style of it is all inspired off of Chinese landscape paintings. And it's beautiful.
I was going to say, it's wonderful. Stunning. And it kind of makes sense because I feel like it's not the same forest I saw in that Sleeping Booty. Not the same forest I saw there.
True.
That forest was boring and drab. But this one had...
Well...
Was he drawing that too?
Let's say Snow White, because Sleeping Beauty was done by another one of my favorite artists, Mary Berry, who was a female cartoonist that was rare.
Well, I'll back off from her. But yes, okay. Snow White, looking at your forest. You see, I've got my my pitchfork is ready to go. I'm just,
I know, you are ready.
You know what it is? I escaped that cult and I just have so much energy just left over.
I know,
of
you
like,
are free and you are like filled with vigor.
Vigor and okay, just, let me, yeah.
All right, let me wrap this up. So in 1941, in the wake of a bitter employee strike of that year, Disney fired Mr. Wong. Thanks.
What?
Thanks for your
they
work.
They were like, hey, you saved this Bambi movie.
You saved Bambi.
And get the fuck out of here.
So it says, though he had chosen not to strike, he felt the studio had been... He felt the studio had been good to him. He was let go amid the lingering climate of post-strike resentment, a.k.a. racism.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But... he wasn't hard up, so Mr. Wong joined Warner Brothers in 1942, so he got a job right after. He worked there and lent out occasionally to other studios until his retirement in 1968. You can see his work in live-action films such as The Sands of Iwo Jima, Rebel Without a Cause, The Wild Bunch, and he also designed Christmas cards for Hallmark and painted elegant Asian inflected designs on diningware,
wow,
which are now sought after by collectors. In 2001, a formal recognition of his influence on Bambi, Mr. Wong was named a Disney legend. Let's just remember that he helped Bambi in 1938,
yeah,
and he's recognized in 2001. But whatever, he got recognized. Mm-hmm. The honor, whose previous recipients include Fred McMurray, Julie Andrews, and Annette Funicello, is bestowed by the Walt Disney Company for outstanding contributors. He died in 2016.
Oh, that's recently.
He died at 106.
Fuck off, but don't, because that is amazing. What?
Isn't that awesome? Is that craziest life? And things that I didn't even mention is he would like make beautiful kites all the way up until like he was in his 100s. Damn. Making these beautiful kites and flying them and just a happy man, even though he lived this crazy ass fucking life. Crazy life.
Well, you know, and it reminds me of, once again, someone who's an untold story of like, this is an Oscar-winning movie in the making.
What?
There's so many, like, lame-ass, no offense, but just, like, these, like, white dudes who are like, I drew a picture, and we have to go, like, what's that Finding Neverland movie? I don't care.
Who cares?
And it became a West End Broadway musical. Don't give a fuck.
I need to hear about this shit.
Yes, absolutely. So...
this story, from the moment he sets foot on that fucking boat for a month...
geez.
...to come over here...
non-stop.
It is non-stop interesting fucking Americana that we need to hear more of.
Absolutely. What I also love is I think it's an inspiring story to all of us of, I mean, talk about someone who there, not even the odds were stacked against him. There were just no odds for him. You know?
No odds.
There were just no odds
he
for him.
He showed up and the playing board was blank.
It was just
they were like, no, sorry,
there's no,
you're not going to succeed.
There's no game. And then they just would change the game as it went along for him. But it just, you know, there's something that's so strong within his spirit and who he was and his talents and his passions, and that he didn't let whatever the rules were define what he was going to
right.
do, you know? And I think, like,
exactly.
I think sometimes, like, I don't know, maybe the gift of, like, coming over here from over there at that time period where they didn't have as much information about, like, America's hella racist, mm-hmm. you know? So right. to not have such preconceived, you know, notions, because I do wonder how often, like, and this is what I think that cult is trying to remove from my brain. But like, how often do we have these like deep rooted thoughts so seeped into our brain that subconsciously they do have an impact and they're a barrier, right? They're a barrier to how much
right.
we allow them to be. But he maybe didn't even have the capacity. He was just trying to live his best life and just
I'm just saying
do his thing.
He was probably on survival mode the moment that he
yeah.
got to Angel Island
yeah.
and had to be by himself. He had no other option but to survive.
Absolutely.
And not only did he survive, he succeeded. So all the snaps to you, Tyrus Wong. Thank
you. Snaps all the way through. Damn.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oof, that was a hard knock life. And I guess according to him, it does get better. But for modern day LGBT folks, does it?
I don't know. Let's find out. Wait, why are you frozen?
Well, it was a button.
Oh, okay.
It was a button.
Oh, right.
Just putting the button on.
Okay.
Just putting the button
okay.
on.
Okay.
Will it get better?
And again, here we go. All right. Okay. I am ready for some information. Does it get better? Has it gotten better?
Did it get better? So for those of you guys who are like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, James. Whoa, slow down with the F-bombs here. Because I kiss your mother with that mouth? And you probably do. And
I know. It's a whew. Yeah. That's a lot.
Well, that's for you and her to talk about at next Thanksgiving. But for now, the It Gets Better video. Y'all remember 2010? Oh, Barack Obama was president. Things were,
Yeah, things were going pretty all right.
Pretty all right. It's a great way. We're just in the, what did we call that? The early aughts had just ended. And we're entering in the...
The early aughts just ended.
Done. Mm-hmm. So Dan Savage, around this time period, there was a huge slew of, like, the big media topic around that time was LGBT teen suicide. It was all the talk. Yes. It was like, oh my God, these kids are, you know, killing themselves. And Dan Savage came up with, what do we do? And Dan Savage, and I just want to put a sidebar, is that, like, that is nothing new, right? It's the same way that, like...
Right, it's been going on. It's always.
Same way that police brutality has always been happening. Yes. LGBT kids have always been killing themselves. It was just...
Yes.
At different points, the media decides what it wants to grapple on to and talk about, right? And I also want to point in the fact of, like, since... I mean, when's the last time you've heard about It Gets Better?
Probably since 2010.
Like 2010, 2011, 2012, around that time period. It just, it petered, definitely petered out. And around that.
It's petered out.
Yeah, and the campaign still exists. You can go to their website. Some of the videos weren't still uploading or whatnot, so you might want to take a look at that, Dan Savage.
They need to refresh. They should probably refresh.
But they did
it.
Like over 50,000 videos of folks essentially would record these videos, you know, telling LGBT folks of like, it gets better, right? So you had folks like Barack Obama, Biden, Pelosi, Clinton. There's
a lot of straight people in the mix. They need to get out of.
Well, Gareth Thomas, rugby star, who he came out, he recorded a video. Jane Lynch, Arkell, Janet Jackson, MSNBC's hottie Thomas Roberts, who he can give me the news all day, every day.
I don't know who that
is. Google him a neke and just get ready to maybe get ready to start singing. You know,
what's his name?
Get ready to start singing how my cult leader would teach you how to start singing. That's all I'm gonna say.
With my nipples.
Jake Shears, Eric Stonestreet, like everybody, even Chris Colfer, not to be confused with Chris Crocker, who was like the Leave Britney Alone guy who turned into a porn star. Porn stars did it. Like your friends did
it. But wait, Chris Crocker is now a personality. He's not just a porn star. He's actually pretty funny. I follow him.
I'm not knocking. He's never just in anything. Nobody puts Chris Colfer in a corner. Or Chris Crocker. No. None of the Chris's. Anyways.
Thomas Roberts is okay.
Your friends did a video. My friends did a video. Everybody did a video. It's also sort of like a who's who time capsule. Because at the time, if you were a celebrity, you did a video. Remember Rutina Wesley from True Blood? She did one.
Oh, she's now on Queen Sugar.
Okay. I was going to say, if she did one now, no one would be like, what? But she's still doing work.
She's doing hella work. She's all up in Oprah and Ava DuVernay, Black Women, Black Girl Magic.
Zachary Quinto did one. But, you know, I mean...
Star Trek. Yeah. He's still doing his shit.
So the idea was to combat suicide with these videos of people, you know, sharing their stories. And I remember around this time period, I was totally moved. So much, in fact, that, like, when I heard about all these kids, you know, committing suicide, I felt like, as an adult gay man, queer man, was like, I pretty much quit my job and joined an acting troupe that was going around to high schools and junior highs.
Yes, I remember when you were doing this.
I joined New Conservatory Theater Center's Youth Aware Troupe, where we did shows around homophobia and racism and body image. Just
I saw one.
You did. All the way that human beings are just essentially mean to each other and make us feel less than. Like, we're doing shows around that. All that shit. So, like I said, around that time period, you know, this was the zeitgeist and, like, the talk of the town. And I also kind of question, like, why – I almost feel like there was a huge conversation about this. And I feel like it was, in a way, I think that in some ways that this is perhaps part of the agenda pushed by the folks who are really trying to get gay marriage passed. I think that's part of the reason why it was put to such a great, you know, attention. And I wonder – why aren't we still talking about this now, even though these gay marriage has passed and we're not still talking about it?
I also think things get buzzy. Things get buzzy, and then that's the purpose of our podcast, is to make sure buzzy things still stay into conversation, you know? Mm-hmm. Like you said, it gets better, faded away, but kids are still feeling lost and without support.
Well, let's look at this, because I got some facts for you about the numbers of this.
Ooh, yeah. Give me the facts.
So suicide is the second leading cause of death amongst young people ages 10 to 24. These are just the...
Second?
Yeah. I bet...
What?
I don't know what the first is. Are you surprised?
Probably car accidents.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm surprised that it isn't more like, you know, car accidents, burning buildings.
Burning buildings.
This is morbid. I don't know.
Burning. Kids are always dying from those burning buildings. Yeah.
It's better. It's not as depressing as suicide.
Yeah. No, suicide. And the rate of suicide attempts is 4 times greater for LGB youth and 2 times greater for questioning youth than it is for straight youth. And a lot of the studies that I was looking at, they specifically actually really, they mention just LGB, and they don't mention all the, there's usually separate studies for trans students, and just automatically figure that those numbers are going to be higher for trans students, right? 1 in 7 heterosexual students, which is about 15% of heterosexual students, had seriously considered suicide, compared to more than 2 in 5 lesbian, gay, and bisexual students, which is about 43%. And again, rates are much higher.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Do you want to know some other random facts that are going on with our LGB youth? Just some other random ones?
Yeah, give me the tidbits.
Just so you can kind of figure out what's the world that they're living in. About 17.8% were likely to have experienced sexual assaults. About 34% of LGB teens provided having been bullied at school. That's like twice the rate of heterosexual students. 28% of LGB students reported being cyberbullied, which is double the rate of heterosexual students. That first fact I gave. Oh, yeah, no, that was good. 10% of LGB students have been treated or injured with a weapon on school property, which is double the rate of heterosexual students. And LGB students were more likely to have been involved in a physical fight. So it's about 28% than heterosexual students, who are at 21%, but twice as likely to have been injured in such a fight, about 5%. And around post-election, CNN and a lot of news reports after the election, there was a rage in suicide hotlines. They received a huge, huge, huge surge, right? So so we had the Gets Better campaign back in 2010, and here it is 2017. These folks are, you know, kids are still...
7 years later, new batch of teenagers.
So the Journal of Homosexuality did a study. I didn't know if y'all knew we had a journal, but we got a journal. So we got a journal.
And, you know, I do have to pause and say, as a librarian, when you have a journal as such, they are peer-reviewed, and they are considered the upper echelon of... research.
Damn.
So this is a good source.
So when we go to the Minority Corner Journal, who got a review?
It will be the Journal of Minority Corners.
Oh,
I don't know.
Damn. No, you got me. You got me. Signed, sealed, delivered on yours. So, so what happened recently? So to getting to where this is going is that what happened recently is that there was a study that came out, and then once the study was produced, all like, the, you know, Logo did an article about this. New Now, Next, Queerity, Washington Blade, a lot of the leading LGBT queer news sources were citing, essentially based off this journal, they were citing, you know, their titles of their articles was like, you know, it gets better, maybe harmful. It gets better. Bad advice. It gets better.
What?
... or does it, based on the study. So what the study did was it examined about 245 lesbian, gay, and bisexual, so LGB young adults aged 21 to 25, and their retrospective reports of coping and response to LGB minority stress during adolescence, age 13 to 19. So how do they deal with this? So they would be about the time period of It Gets Better. What was, how did you relate to it? How did you survive it? And what was the validity of their coping? How are they coping with it?
So essentially, did it get better?
Well, they looked at 3 different strategies common to LGBT, LGB teens. Were identified. So there were 3. They looked at LGB specific strategies, which means involvement with LGBT organizations. So like, you know, your GSA, your Safe Spaces group. And then the second one would be alternative seeking strategy, like finding new friends. And the last one is cognitive strategies. So imagining a better future, which is sort of like the It Gets Better campaign. So they're like, which three was very useful to you, or which ones did you rely on? And Sidebar, in this other study that I was looking at, apparently losing a friend when coming out as LGB seemed to have the biggest impact on whether someone had attempted suicide. So youth who...
So would you... Negatively or positively?
So while I'll read this, you'll piece it together, my little Nancy Drew. So youth who lost friends after coming out as LGB were 29 times more likely to report having attempted suicide. So
negatively. Yeah, that makes sense to me. Because teenagers, their frontal cortex has not developed.
Right.
So there's a thing called the ripple effect. So if a student... commit suicide, there will be more attempts because they see the how you lift them up in the afterlife, and they don't understand permanence as well.
Wow. So in some ways, perhaps like maybe all of the publicizing about it was not a good thing.
Right. Because then, or it's a tricky.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm saying this from experience because I worked at a high school where there were two suicides.
Yeah.
And
samesies. Well, not same, not like in a cute way, but like, you know,
no,
like
you get it.
I get it. Yeah. Like, I worked with the junior high school students and the high schoolers. Yeah.
Right. It's one of those things where it's like when it happens, you want to honor the student who lost their life, but you also don't want to glorify the student.
Mm.
So talking about it gets better in a sense is trying to be preventative.
Right.
But it's also. It's a tricky slope
for
teenagers.
Well, here's the findings were that the cognitive-based strategies, such as It Gets Better approach, were associated with poorer adjustment and less likelihood of high school attainment. So essentially, like, just the folks who were like, I use It Gets Better, like, it was associated with not having positive results in the end, right? So it's just this study. And again, they interviewed, but at the same time, like, I guess kind of disappointing because they interviewed, like, 245 students, and then they...
That's not... That,
right. Yeah. So I'm a little, I don't feel like maybe all the research was finished, but anyways, Professor Russell Toomey from Arizona, he said, our findings question the It Gets Better narrative that's been given to LGB youth. Asking youth to accept negative experience as the only coping strategy potentially exacerbates stress. He then says the campaigns are associated with more depressive symptoms and less self-esteem and less satisfaction in life. So...
Interesting. I thought it was a positive message.
Oh, it is. But what they're saying is that if you're just telling someone it gets better, it does nothing to do with, of course it does. It's a positive sentence. It's like, it's going to get better. But what it doesn't say is necessarily how to deal with it right then and there.
Oh, smart. Yes. It's basically like deal. It's going to get better.
Well, but here's the thing that I want to pump the brakes on that. I was really disappointed in all these articles that I read. And listen, I'm not a scientist. But I'm also definitely not a cult leader, right?
No.
But I have an inner Oprah in me, and so do you. And so one of the things I'm kind of upset with about these findings are, well, it's why would we just look at just one of these as the solution? How dare anyone just think like, well, it gets better. Duh, duh. Good luck, little lesbian Susie.
Right?
Good luck, queer Johnny. Like, that's...
Exactly. It's a collaborative effort of a lot of things. You need your friend. You need It Gets Better. You need a group. You need the GSA. You need your parents to support you.
So
it's not just one cure-all.
Well, and that's the thing. That literally is my next point. If you... And I'm speaking to any... I'm speaking to everyone out there. For any issue or thing that you feel like you are being confronted with, and we all have them deep rooted with inside of our little psyche, and we need to unroot them without the means of a cult. See, they got me.
We all go
they
through
got
some
me so
shit.
Scared that cult. I am so terrified.
I know.
I
you
want
are
everyone
shaking.
To. I am like
you are shaking.
I was made me hard to even like meditate afterwards. I'm like, is this meditation a cult? Anyways, circling back.
You can get out of your shit without tweaking your nipples.
This is if you learn anything from today's episode, you do not need to tweak your nipples to get out of your shit. But if you anybody. is looking for one single magical fucking pill. There isn't one. There is not one stop shop. It literally takes everything, and it takes work. And I think the guy, the artist that you just talked about in the last round, Tyrus.
Oh, Tyrus Wong.
If he let him be our guide, you know, for this, because if he shows us anything, it takes fucking work, right? It takes just a fucking work to continue pushing on. And for us nowadays, knowing all the information that we have at our fingertips and in our brains, it takes work to unpeel off all the baggage and all the layers of generational bullshit, plus the new layers of generational bullshit that we're also creating new layers of generational bullshit on top of that. So it takes work, and life, it can be and enjoyable. And I think we are totally. In a time period where we can work through all of this. We can work through it and limit the amount of pain that we allow ourselves to be inflicted with. But yeah. It takes work. And if you're looking for someone to give you to the keys to life's happiness, they're not coming because there
ain't nobody got the keys.
There are no keys. But you know, I'll tell you this, Aneke. The door is unlocked. So there you go.
Ooh, look at you, Oprah moment. Ooh, looking at you, Oprah moment. The door's already unlocked. You just gotta work through it. You know what? If you find yourself between a laundromat and a brothel and you're working for 50 cents a day for a Pasadena family, you gotta work through it. Yeah. You gotta work.
And I thought you were going to say, like, it was a new metaphor for, like, a rock and a hard space, a place. But it works. If you find, like, that is a metaphor. If you are between a brothel and living at an orphanage, like, this is, you know.
You gotta work. Yeah, it is a rock and a hard place.
It really is. And
I'm going to look it up real quick just to make sure I'm not saying it wrong.
And I just kind of want to shine a light, too, because some might say and this is where I think folks like Omarosa, Ben Carson, and Stacey Dash get it wrong. While I do believe that everyone has the potential to get out of where they are, but if you're surrounded by negativity with no visions of what a better tomorrow possibly looks like, then it's hard for you to get out of there. So
yeah,
I would like to recommend a little book for everybody that I'm in the process of reading. I'm gonna unpack this a little bit later once I finish reading it, but it is by this author. His name is James T. Nolan. He is 31 years old, and he is black and gay, and he is a fucking millionaire. He's from Lynchburg, something south, some southern state called Lynchburg. He grew up, you know, with this idea that he calls, you know, poverty consciousness, which I think a lot of us, you know, have. Mm-hmm. And again, this sort of, you know, that we have this deep thing that is inside of us that sometimes, like, we aren't good enough, or we're not attractive enough, or it's so buried in there. But we can have more, and we deserve more.
Lifting up your self-worth.
Right. Yes. And so I know we've gone in like a long sort of, you know, tangent, but I also want to challenge everybody, you know, what's in your daily mental, physical, spiritual diet? What's in it?
Ooh,
okay. Who are the voices that you surround yourself with, even in your ear holes right now? Apparently us, so yay.
Hello, ear holes.
And we're not a cult. If I keep saying it, you're probably going to start thinking that we are.
I know, you say it enough times that we aren't. People are going to think we are.
I wasn't thinking you were a cult, but now I'm pretty sure you are. But y'all drinking
I'm going to go back into the catalog.
But they're drinking the Kool-Aid anyways, so we love y'all.
Ooh, look at you. Okay.
You know, I've said this before, but vision board, you have nothing to lose and everything to gain from dreaming about a better tomorrow for yourself. What is it that you really, really want to do? There's so much unlimited, untapped potential that we all have, and so you have to do the work to get those little negative nuggets out, right? So doing the work of therapy, affirmations.
Even small things. I just have to plug this in because I feel like this is huge for women. When you get into groups of lady friends, I don't know, this is just what I know, so I don't know what it's like in a man group, but
you get into we talk like this. What's it like a man group? I love man group.
But you'll notice this in a lady group, ladies will be like, oh, I'm feeling kind of fat today. And another lady will chime in and be like, oh, I did not bring my top game today, or I'm just not doing well. I've started to be like, well, I'm doing good.
Yes, Aneke, and then it kinda, look at you.
It breaks people out of it, where it's that cycle of complaint and cycle of being humble. I think we're taught to be humble and to be like, I'm not that great. It's okay. No, it's okay to be like, no, I'm good.
I'm fucking good.
I like where I live. I like who I am. And even sometimes faking it will make you feel better.
Oh my God. Aneke, you are brilliant beyond your years. I mean, it's like what dudes do is they just go up to a table and slap their dick on a table, or like their imaginary dick, and it's like super huge and big. And you're like, oh, I believe it, because the way they just walked over here, right? And it literally is, you know, change your mindset, like these things. And if it feels awkward or weird for you, it's because sorry to say, but that's how deep-rooted your negativity is. And of course it is, because you've got it from every angle of someone saying you're not enough, you're not good enough. And then also probably, sadly, our parents who are trying to do the best that they could by just giving us a real, like preparing us for the real world, also probably seeped in some shit for us and trying to do their best. But it's like, there's so much, like I said at the very beginning, so many baggages of layers that we need to unpack. And so it takes work. It's daily work. It's, it's finding the right books, podcasts, meditations, support groups. And cause we, somewhere along the line, we've subconsciously on some levels bought these narratives that we're wrong or undeserving or not talented enough or that we can't have money or we can't be successful. So can we inspire each other like Aneke was doing in the small things of turning her group around? And like, what are you taking in your daily diets?
Right. I completely, just refocusing on that shit makes you like, it will improve your outlook. You know?
Yep.
And I'm so grateful that you're bringing this stuff up. And yeah, it's a little Oprah-esque and a little therapy, but I think that that's important for us. We need to hear this stuff. We all can't. Being sarcastic all the time becomes detrimental and it eats away at you.
Well, and sometimes I question.
It eats the inside.
And sometimes I question. Sometimes that's a bit of an armor. And so it's easier to let that because it's a survival instinct and you've had these thorns up. And to work through the pain, the heart. And do you know that Adam Carolla was trying to, have you heard about this? Fuck this guy.
No.
So as I wrap up here, I just want to put this man in his ass hat corner. And so to be aware, because as things have not necessarily, although suicide rates are slightly lower since the passing of same-sex marriage. So that's been really good. They can look at it, especially from the states who've passed it from, you know, I think back in, what was the first state that it got passed in? Was it 1999? Was it Massachusetts? Is it that long ago?
I don't think it's the 80s.
No, it wasn't. No, it's pretty sure. I think it was 1989. I think it was Massachusetts. Okay. I know it was Massachusetts. I just don't know which year. But so they're able to track like suicide rates amongst LGBT teens since then. And they can see already there is a slight decrease or whatnot. But we need to get that even further down. And you have asshats like Adam Carolla and some douchebag Dennis Prager. They were trying to do a California State University Northridge. They were trying to do a no spaces conversation or no safe spaces. Because there are these, you know, straight white dudes. And they're like, why do we need safe spaces for?
I was going to say this is dripping with privilege.
They don't get it. They don't like, what do we need those for? I feel safe to say whatever space. I want.
This is my space. Why isn't it your space?
So it gets even worse. But it's freedom of speech. Just making y'all aware, because I think we need to do a fundraising and make our own documentary, because they're looking to raise $500,000 for their documentary, No Safe Spaces. Because he feels like he's been the victim of student protest where he wasn't able to speak.
He's been the victim of it?
Yeah.
He's a rich man.
I know. Well, he's jumping on the bandwagon because Ann Coulter got, you know, banned from a university and that Milo.
Well, she's doo-doo.
And that Milo Yapa go fuck yourself-anopolis.
That guy can go fuck himself.
Milo Yapa go fuck yourself-anopolis, right? That guy.
Yeah.
But what actually happened, it looks like they just didn't fill out the right paperwork, but their client, they're like, he's crying. Adam Carolla is crying.
They couldn't even fill out the paperwork?
Good luck. So even though numerous laws and policies are affecting, you know, sexual minorities, we still remain, there's still plenty of laws too that just are openly out there that do affect LGB folks, protection.
I mean, things are coming down the fucking pipeline, too. We don't know where this administration is coming, so we need to be ready and prepared.
Similar to last week of your, do you have a permit to wear those high heels? There's already still laws in place that, you know, don't necessarily protect students of LGBT underneath bullying laws and things like that. Only 19 states, including the District of Columbia, have laws that protect students from harassment based on their sexual orientation and and whatnot.
19 out of 50?
Not doing too well. So we got to get involved and protect our kids, our youth, and there's a lot of work to do. We got to help them to go to therapy and find some friends who will also hopefully, you know, do the same. They're doing the same work that you're doing, hopefully, and hopefully they're also going to therapy because it can get really nasty in some areas. Y'all are velvet raging. Yeah. If you don't know what the velvet rage is, Google it, buy that book, and that's it.
I love it. You know what? James.
It is getting better, because that's what we're here to do, to make sure it continues to get better. And I challenge you all this. How good can you stand it? Right? Let that carry us through. How good can you stand it? Better. More. Oh. More. Yeah.
Oh my God. Better. Oh, revival.
It gets better. It gets better. It's getting better. I hurt myself. But it's better.
Okay. Do you need some ice? You okay? Listener question.
Thank you for participating, listener. This one is coming from Ebony.
Yes, Ebony, yes. She is active member in the Corner Kids Super Playground. Poster. She's
Super
the best.
Poster.
Delightful, yeah, really hilarious, so, wonderful.
So let's go to her question.
Okay, let's go.
Hey, James and Nanneke. Hey, Nanneke and James. My question. Last episode. Oh, this is Ebony, by the way. So, hi. Yeah, this is what my voice is like. Isn't it nasally? The last episode you had, Nanneke, you mentioned that your husband was vegetarian. I am starting to see someone who is vegetarian, and the moment they mentioned they were, I start to panic, because I was like, oh my God, does this mean I have to like watch what I eat around them? And they were like, no, and it's true, it's not that way at all. But I'm wondering, how has life changed for you with living with a vegetarian, and what were your small adjustments that you made as you guys got more and more serious? Like, what was Thanksgiving like? Because I don't know what I don't know what I can do with, oh my God, I don't know what I can do with food with this person. So that is my question. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, that was okay. Thank you, that Ebony. You know what?
She's trying to. We're almost out of a job.
I know.
We're looking at like the new host of Minority Corner right there. I think she's got us both.
I don't know if I can sing her names anymore because.
But also, you know what? I want to say it's not a, you know, it does take a village. So thank you for helping us uplift the energy of Minority Corner. So killing it on that. Nanneke, I'm going to let you take this one away.
Yes. So yeah, I did mention in a previous post, probably in a lot of previous different episodes, that my husband Andrew is vegetarian and I like the meats.
Mm-hmm. She do. She like the meats.
I like the meats.
She like the meat.
In fact, I went to Korean barbecue recently and ate so much all you can eat meat that it took me 2 days to drop a deuce.
Yeah. Yeah.
Drop a deuce.
Great going in, doesn't come out.
Nope. So, how do we make it work? So basically, one, it takes the vegetarian. So you mentioned that the vegetarian said it's cool for you to eat meat. So that's basically the litmus test for me. Like, Andrew was totally chill. Like, eat your meat, enjoy your meat, do what you got to do. It's my personal choice. I will say that if you're dating somebody who's restricting something that you personally are doing, vegetarian or not, that's not good because you're living your own life and you should be able to make your own decisions. So if somebody is telling you that you got to live by their standard, I might say that that's a red flag. But when you are living, dating, enjoying sex in a vegetarian, I would say find a restaurant. You got to be, it's a partnership. So when you're going out to eat, look for restaurants that have at least two or three vegetarian options on there, because it kind of sucks to go to a restaurant and only eat like.
You're like, look at all this shit I can eat. And they're like, all I have is this lettuce.
Exactly.
This lettuce leaf.
So you got to be decent in that route. And then flip it. Sometimes your vegetarian lover will just have to suck it up if you want to go to Meat Emporium at one point, you know, if you guys are doing things together. I need my meat. So there's that.
Yeah.
I personally at home cook vegetarian because it's just healthier, and cooking meat is annoying for me. So I'm basically vegetarian in the house. I don't suggest that. If you want to cook meat in your own house, you are damn well pleased to cook the meat that you want to cook your meat.
Just live your own meat life.
Yeah. So just, it's all about considerate. Just be considerate and things will work out, you know? And also have your friends.
Congrats on the boo love.
Yeah. Congrats on the boo love. It's always fun to find a new, exciting boo and to navigate these things and to have your friends in your back pocket so you can go to Meat Emporium and not depend on your boo to go with you too.
Yeah. Cause they don't need to be like, you know, don't be waving that bacon in front of their face.
Yeah, you don't want to flaunt it. And then don't be a dick. Don't be like, this meat is so good.
I'm eating these ribs.
Don't be a dick. And
wanna
that's my suggestion.
Want to taste my rib fingers?
Yeah. No,
I don't know what y'all do. That's interesting, too, because like I've been thinking about this recently, too, is that changing up my, you know, I'm a man in his 30s. And just changing up a lot of the way that we eat. I'm trying to cut back on processed foods, eat just a lot more fresher and healthier because I think it's going to help. It helps with anxiety. It helps with mood. Yes. Also, just the products that we put on our bodies. This is hard because I love smelling so damn good. Yes. But I'm going to try to like maybe wean myself off of deodorant and look for other things because there's so much goddamn aluminum. But Old Spice smells so good.
I know. That's one thing I can't live without. I don't like being stinky. But you know what? You make your decisions for your body. So
right. Well, something I want to just encourage a lot of our listeners to, it's always good to, I think, to check in and look at your eating habits and stuff like that. I would encourage all of us to continue kicking it up a notch. And someone I was listening to recently, they said, instead of like throwing everything out of your pantry or throwing all of your products out, just substitute one new healthy thing as you go along in life. So it's not a completely upheaval.
Yeah.
And anytime you're doing something like that, it allows you to, it's more sustainable because when you do a complete overhaul, it's a lot and it can just, it's hard to keep that up. But just find little nuggets here and there and then you just start to, before you know it, you'll have a really beautiful, healthy lifestyle that you can sustain for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best thing is, don't think of new experiences as a burden. Think of it as a way to explore and see and adapt to something that may be new and good for you. I mean, like I personally have cut back on my meat eating and I feel good.
I'm sure.
Like, I feel way better.
You also think about, like, honestly, the way that our meat is produced here. I mean, I'm sure if you're living in, you know, Oakland and Berkeley and, you know, very hippy-dippy, like, places where it's like...
We still eat garbage.
I know, but sometimes, like, you find, like, the full background of how, like, your cow, like, lives. And Bessie lived
her
a really nice
Martha.
Life.
Martha,
she just ate grass, completely grass-fed. Yeah. She loved Beyonce. You get all that, right?
Yeah.
But so it's also like you think about like the stress of that animal that we put into our body of how it was like not, and I love myself some meat, but like I know the minute I learn too much about it, I'll be like, oh Lord. Because like we're putting that stress and energy into our body and these things that were like mass murdered. It just, you know, it's insane.
Nothing like seeing the head on an animal right before you eat it will get you to remember where it came from. So
yeah.
And figure out what works best for your body and what works best for your relationship.
I'm also trying to cut back on eating pigs because they're so smart. I don't mind
That's
eating chickens because they're so stupid. They're so fucking dumb.
Well,
like, no offense to you chicken owners, but they're dumb pets. Like, let's be honest. On the evolutionary food, they're like, I think dumb things can totally be eaten. But like when they're really, like pigs are so smart, they're like smart like dogs. So I feel... I'm trying to wean myself off the pig.
I kind of feel like if you eat one type of meat,
free for all.
Yeah,
fair enough.
I mean, that's kind of how I feel. Like it's a life that's been given, and I don't know. It is hard when something is super smart because it could possibly have consciousness that it knows what's going on, which is freaky. But Ebony, you mentioned Thanksgiving, so. If you are worried about Thanksgiving, generally what happens with me and Andrew is he brings his own dish. He'll bring a dish or he'll bring like a tofurkey. Or
he's like, I'm set.
Yeah. Or
make
like,
sure he eats.
Right. So then that way the vegetarian is for sure going to have something to eat. Because like when I was getting married and I asked my family, I was like, okay, well, Andrew is a vegetarian. A lot of them were like, but he eats shrimp, right? And I have
That's
to be
a general
like,
thing of like a general thing of like when folks and I'm like a lot of like I think older black folks don't understand vegetarianism.
Don't get it.
I mean, They just don't. They're like, but here's a chicken.
I know.
You gotta eat this chicken?
Chicken eats grain.
And don't even try to like if they're like, I'm vegan, they're like, okay, here's a bunch of cheese.
I know.
You're like, oh,
what?
Lord.
Don't eat cheese?
Yeah.
So I hope that helps. Man, what a good episode.
Okay, and Anneke, before we close it out, I need you to walk the listeners through what you shed some light on to me. I was watching the season finale of Scandal.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And I texted Anneke. I was like, is Kerry Washington wearing a wig? Because sometimes I'm like, she's wearing one, and sometimes I can't. And I'll tell you this, it distracts me from all of the drama that's happening, because every scene she's in, I'm just like, is that a wig? Mm-hmm. Wait, it's not a wig there, but it is there. And like, at least with like Viola Davis, I always know. It's a wig because she showed up. She made sure
yeah.
you knew she wasn't trying to pretend it was anything else but what it wasn't. Although there was one time she was laying in bed with her wig in and all that makeup on. And I was like, but I thought you took that off before you get to bed. Anyways, she don't do that no more.
Gotta be camera ready, y'all. Gotta be camera ready. Okay, so wigs, especially Shondaland wigs, they're the creme of the crop. She knows how to treat a black woman's hair well.
Yeah.
All the black women on a Shonda show tend to look pretty damn good.
And some of them have natural hair-like styles. Some of them, they just go all the gamut.
The whole gamut, and I love it. It is beautiful. So, hair. And I am talking about white women, Asian women, Latina women, black women. If you're on television and even if you have a beautiful, luxurious mane, 9 times out of 10, there is an extra piece of hair in there.
So they all get it up in there.
Everybody, if you're on television and you're not made up to look like you're like on the ground trash town, if you're supposed to be a glamorous woman on television, you got some hair.
I want
in
you
there.
To start. Can you start sometimes. Outing? Because I have a list now. Okay, Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin on Frank and Grinky. I can't say their name. What's that show? Grinky and Grinky. Frankie Ganky. Gracie and Grinky.
Like Frankie
Ganky. Grinky. Ganky and I can't get it. Grinky Fracy.
Grace and
it's
Frankie.
A tongue twister. Lord knows how you do it. Is that a wig?
Yeah, those two are definitely wearing. I think that Lily Tomlin is definitely wearing a wig because if you see her in an interview, she doesn't have long.
That's
gray
what
hair.
I thought
she
too.
Has short,
yeah, yeah.
Hair.
Okay.
And then Jane Fonda, they probably do her hair. Her hair looks good, but I wouldn't be surprised if they have a couple of pieces added in at the base to make it look.
Because I'm always trying to wonder because then it's like she's laying in bed and I'm like, oh, she'll do a flip or fall down or something. You know, it's very.
Because that shit is clipped in, everybody. If you see Beyonce, she will do a flip. She will do a head roll. It is all of those hairs. It's no longer just willy nilly on the head. If you are on television, you are pinned in, you are sewn in, you are clipped in.
But sometimes there are. It's sometimes like, you were talking to me that sometimes Kerry Washington has a little bit of her own natural hair.
Yeah.
Walk me through that. How does that work?
Okay, so there are a couple of different things. So a leave out is what I was telling you about. So a leave out gives you a natural hairline. So it's basically, you can have several different things. You can have a weave, which is essentially hair sewn to your head. Your hair is braided to your head, and the hair is sewn into the braids on your head. So it's not like sewing. I'm already seeing a bunch of cringy, some our white listeners being like, ow! No, it's in the hair.
Yeah.
Calm down.
You're good.
We're not sewing.
You see how
to
tough
head.
Black women are? Because they are just like, get it in my head.
No. It is on the hair. And yes, it is painful because it's tight.
But
that's
a
weave is sewed into the hair. A little bit. But a wig is something that you just slap on your head, but you also pin it in so it doesn't move. And a leave out means that your hairline and your part are out, meaning you blend in your own hair with the wig hair, giving you a natural hairline and a natural, what is this around your head?
Baby hairs.
Your hairline. Yeah, baby hairs, hairline part. That's all natural. Creating the illusion that, that the rest of the hair is because
on different episodes they're doing it even better. I swear the last episode of Scandal, it was back to her own hair because I think she was going back and forth. She was like, "Listen, I just had a baby. Just give me the wig. Give me the wig today. Full wig." And then the last one, she's
I
like,
"I can tell you, I was looking."
But the last one wasn't her hair. I swear she was running. There was a helicopter. That helicopter would have blown it off her face.
I'm telling no, James. I told you
it was a helicopter. I swear, like because the last episode, it didn't have like the ridiculous. Sometimes I'm like, that is too much hair.
It's too curly.
Yeah, too curly. It's too curly. The last episode, it had some flaw to it. You know, it had a little bit.
I'm almost positive it was. There was probably some pieces clipped in.
Okay.
So it wasn't a full head wig, so it looked a little less fake, but. You can have a wig on your head and you can put an industrial strength fan to my face. That hair is not going anywhere because you need to create that illusion. And last thing you want is to get into a fight with somebody and they go snatching your wig and then you're stuck there with a wig cap on looking. A fool.
Because
so you got
not
clip
only
that
do you,
shit
and
in.
That's how women have to do it up. Because not only if you were in a street fight, you ladies, you need to win the fight. And then also look good doing it. Like, you just have so much to do. I mean, she does it all.
But here's a secret for men.
What?
A lot of men will draw in their beards and hair in places where it's spotty. Like LeBron James.
What? I didn't know this.
He has a spotty-ass beard and a spotty-ass hair. Damn. So when he's playing basketball, look at him. And then when he's in a commercial, look at him. His beard will be significantly darker and his hairline will be significantly darker because he's drawing that shit
I think
in.
We need a new corner segment and it's called Aneke, She Sees You. And she's going to call it out. It's going to be like, his beard, real or fake? She's like, fake. Her hair, real or fake? Jennifer Hudson.
Well, she got a short haircut right now, so that could be real.
See, she's already going to work.
She got a short haircut.
Do you know Married with Children, Katie Sagal? She was wearing a wig that entire time on that show. I did not know.
That was obvious.
I didn't know.
That was so obvious.
I was 8. I did not know.
Well, true. But now I look at that and I go, wig.
You came out of the womb being able to spot it. You were like, wah, wig. Wah, nice hair piece.
I am trained in the art of hair pieces. even though the hair technology is getting so much even miraculously better now that I can't even tell the difference. I watched a whole YouTube thing on how to create a part in a full head lace wig, meaning you just take a little foundation, tappy tap tap on that hairline, and there you go. It blends in right to your face.
Wow. From my drag days, I sort of know what you're talking about, but I got lost, but I love your excitement about it. You just like were a kid in like Disneyland just now.
Also, I like your drag days where it was like 3 times.
I know. It was like 2 years ago.
Like you're making it like nostalgic.
I'm retired. I'm retired. And it seems like more than 3 times. I have like 5 or 6 wigs just in a box. I know. They're supposed to be on heads and shit.
You just love a wig though. You'll pull out a wig from time to time. You'll reach into your closet and pull out a wig like we did when we were recording and you had that bad haircut.
It's true. And the world still never saw that because I wore that wig for a while. Before we go, Aneke and I both have a Wonder Twins recommendation. That's what it is. Wonder Twins recommendation. Oh. Boom.
Doodle doodle do. Am I high-fiving you? I don't know what is. Okay.
Now I'm just showing you my armpit.
Nice.
Hasan Minhaj on Netflix. It's
pretty. Yes. Watch it. It's so good.
Hasan Minhaj. It is like, so good.
Hilarious. He's from The Daily Show.
I think Hasan Minhaj Homecoming. I think that's what it's called.
Homecoming
King.
King
Homecoming
or boy?
King. Homecoming King. I think, and I told you this when I saw it, and correct me if I'm way off base here, I think he's going to revolutionize stand-up comedy because his show was like nothing I've
really
ever seen
job.
Before. It was like a TED Talk, but it was also like
it was hella
it was
funny.
So funny, and he also used like a lot
I
of
cried
I,
at
oh
one
god,
point.
It was so beautiful, and like it's just it's unlike any other stand up I've ever seen. It's so personable. I think it's like exactly what I feel like comedy can do, and I hope does more of, where it just gets you to laugh and think, and we're getting to meet other human beings who his story has never been told, like that guy,
and it's not vulgar either. Like, you can watch it with your parents and not feel, like, embarrassed mm-hmm. about it. Like, the Dave Chappelle, Louis C.K., I heard the new Tracy Morgan, all of them are, like, hilarious, but I'm sure it would be cringy to, like, watch some guy talk about his dick when you're, like, your mom or your dad are sitting there or grandma's there. But Hasan Minhaj is, like, not vulgar, but hilarious and, like, really informative, telling the story of immigration, being an Indian American, coping in school.
Being Muslim as well.
Yes, yeah. And the Muslim and Hindu relationations between Indians. It's
so good. And I think he was able, like, there's also a lot of visuals and stuff that time in so well that, like, when we do, once we get our Minority Corner TV show in a few years, I'm already stealing some ideas. I'm like, we're going to do that. Ooh, we're going to have that going on in the background.
Put that in the hat.
Yes. So, yes. Highly recommend that. Well, I also
have a recommendation. What is it? You should buy a book called This Is What a Librarian Looks Like because I'm in it.
You should. Is that really the title of the book?
Yeah,
what I love is that someone in the Minority Corner, I think they didn't realize that you were in it. And they were like, this is what a librarian looks like. I think of Aneke when I see this. And Aneke is like, you should. I'm on the top corner in the center of the book.
Yeah, I was like, I'm on the cover of that book. I'm also in it as well. But it has interviews, aside from me being in it, it also has interviews from
next.
But it's awesome.
All right, see you next week.
It's all about, come on. It's about Neil Gaiman gives an interview, Nancy Pearl.
Ooh.
There's like all of these different people talking about why information is important, what librarians are doing and how they're on the front line of preserving facts, not alternative facts.
You are. Well, and there was that war that I think librarians served in. Was it World War I? There was some war you talked about in a History Corner about 2 years ago that librarians went to war. We talked about it on a Veterans Day. All right, Corner Kids, we need our die-hard ones to reach out into the archives.
Could have been a
fever dream. Who knows? The librarians served in one of the wars. You did it as a History Corner. I'm not even kidding.
You did.
I forget which one. Well,
it's probably early.
Anyways, kudos to you, librarians, and get involved in the conversation.
About not just something that's not Pepsi.
Not just the librarians, but, oh, yeah. About something, not just Pepsi. But get involved in the conversation. You can find us on the Twitters. You can...
Yes, Minority Corner with a K. I'm also on there as Ms. Fitzy, so you can find me there. James doesn't tweet
I'm
them.
On there, too, as... do you know what my handle is? If you know it, please tweet it to me. That won't help.
It's James Arthur M. I know.
Okay,
it.
I'm at James Arthur M. Do I have like an underscore or something?
I don't think so.
So apparently I'm at James Arthur M. tweet me.
We're also on Facebook, Minority Corner with a K, and we have the Corner Kids group. Keep joining. It's awesome.
Come on over there. You give me such life every day. And I appreciate Aneke, this corner. Most of all, you know why? Because you ain't a cult.
What?
You ain't it's not a cult.
We will leave your nipples alone.
Leave my
nipples James.
Alone. But that's how you know. Listen, as Aneke said, if there's anybody who's trying to tell you to feel with your nipples and it's not a sexual situation, it's a cult. So run away.
Leave.
Get out of there.
Leave the room. Put down the orange juice. Get in your car and drive home. Yeah.
But congratulations, you just hung out with us and we were not a cult. So yay!
Yay!
Continuing to not be a cult all day, every day.
I like to Hulu and chill. Am I a monster?
What's happening on Game of Thrones?
What's a technical Emmy?
Why did Dominic Toretto go rogue?
Is this meme already dead?
Nicki Minaj or Remy Ma?
For answers to these questions and so much more, come on over to Pop Rocket, a pop culture roundtable discussion that always has a fun, diverse panel talking about the stuff we love. Catch us every Wednesday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you decide to get your podcasts. I'm not going to judge.
Mugs, shirts, stickers, patches, tanks, and more are yours for the purchasing at MaxFunStore.com. Hey, you already love the podcasts, so why not take this to the next level and outfit your home and bod with our merch? MaxFunStore.com. Because if you have to wear a shirt, it should be one of ours.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.